welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM. My name is Eddie Lesher, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guests for this week. We come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at wpvmfm.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation, as we take an in-depth and informative look into approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction, recovery, and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, our website is amindfulemergence.com. And with that, I want to welcome our listening audience and wish everyone out there a happy new year, and also welcome into the studio my co-host Margaret Kirshner on this frigid Monday evening.
I'm happy to be here, and it's a lot warmer in here.
Yeah, nice to be warm, nice and toasty warm in our WPVM studios. And at this point, I want to welcome our special guest for this week, and we're very pleased to be joined by Anastasia Bartlett and Dr. Richard Schaefer. And the topic is going to be creating healthier habits for a lifetime of happiness. And what better time to get off on the right foot than at the beginning of the year? Welcome to our studios, Anastasia.
Hello.
And Rich.
Hi, how are you doing?
Appreciate you coming in. And this is such a great topic to be talking about. I mean, who doesn't want to be healthier, right?
Yes.
And Rich, perhaps you could give us an idea, and Anastasia, what our focus is going to be on for this hour.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us this evening. We're privileged to be here. And both Anastasia and I have a deep passion for helping the people that we interact with on a daily basis to live happier, healthier lives. And we realize that's sometimes very difficult to do in the world in which we live. And both of us have experience in trying to help people see things in a realistic way in terms of having success and making behavioral changes and physical changes and having healthier mental approaches to wellness and what that means. So we look forward to helping to define that a little bit more this evening and show people a little bit how we can do that and help them proceed forward and be in a healthier state for the next year.
Yeah, with understanding too that it's not a one-size-fits-all, that there are lots of different ways to go about shifting into a healthier lifestyle.
Wait a minute, you're telling us you don't have the magic bullet?
No, no. <Nope.
laughs> And anybody who does tell us is, we better not probably.
Right, if somebody promises you have the one answer, then you probably should walk away.
Walk away, right. So, Rich, you are a board-certified family physician. You're an MD, and correct. You received your medical degree from the University of Texas, and then completed your residency in Roanoke, Virginia at the Carilion Clinic. Am I saying that right?
That's correct.
And you're the medical director and co-owner of several integrative practices in the Charlotte area. And your focus is preventative medicine, weight management, chronic pain, and regenerative medicine therapies.
That's correct.
Yeah. Wow. You got your hands full down there.
We sure do. We certainly love what we do and love helping people in the way that we do it.
Mm-hmm. And Anastasia, you're a certified health coach, personal trainer, yoga teacher. You have your own wellness practice called Bartlett Wellness, and we'll get that website later. And your focus is really guiding and motivating clients to take responsibility for their own health and fitness for a lifelong program of success, to be really the healthiest version of themselves.
Yes.
And you have an office here?
No. So actually, I offer something a little bit different. And I think that's one of the things that sets me apart is I come to my clients.
Okay.
So my one-on-one. So obviously, I teach classes to group classes and group lessons. But as far as one-on-one clients, I come to their home.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Boy, that's hard to find in today's age.
It is,
actually,
yes.
Go to people's homes.
Yes, yes.
Do you also teach yoga at various yoga centers?
I do, yes. Mostly right now at Asheville Community Yoga.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Where yep. Margaret is teaching prenatal yoga.
And so am I.
And
yes.
so are you.
Yes.
You're both teaching yes. prenatal.
So I do prenatal Monday through Fridays over there. And I also teach another vinyasa flow class. But prenatal yoga is my focus right now.
Wow.
Yes.
Aren't these people in Asheville lucky to have both of you doing that?
Well, I took classes from Margaret.
Oh, did you?
Yes. So I've been pregnant 5 times. I've carried 3 surrogate babies mm-hmm. and took classes from Margaret pretty regularly. She was one of my inspirations, actually,
wow.
to teach prenatal yoga. So...
Well, she's my inspiration, too, but in a different way. Yeah. So what's your background, Anastasia? Are you from the North Carolina area?
No, I grew up in Connecticut.
Oh, like
another,
Margaret.
Another thing we have in common, yes.
Wow.
And I moved to Georgia. My parents divorced, and my mom's a Southern girl, so she moved us back down south. And so mm-hmm. I grew up part of my life in Georgia as well. And then here. Pretty much so.
How long you been in the Asheville area?
I've been here almost 12 years.
Okay.
Yep.
So were you interested in health when you were young, or were you like me where you decided to almost destroy your health before you got interested?
I've always had a passion for movement.
Okay. What were you doing?
Dancing.
Oh, wow.
I've always been, yeah, I love to dance and
okay.
just move my body. Soccer player in high school, rode horses mm-hmm. competitively. So I've always been active and always thought I was healthy. We talk about that. People sort of, everybody has an idea or a theory to share. And so actually started working with Dr. Schaefer. We had a weight management program.
Was that here in Asheville?
That was here in Asheville. Yeah. And that's really where my focus shifted in the sense of health and wellness and how to help people and wanting to do that more as a profession.
Mm-hmm. And you are a certified yoga instructor.
I am. Mm-hmm.
When did you take that training?
The teacher training I did a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yep. So
awesome.
While I was pregnant, actually.
Wow.
At Asheville
Community Yoga. Yep.
So, Rich, where are you from?
Born and raised in Houston, Texas, actually.
Oh.
So I'm a Texan through and through. And went to undergraduate school in Louisiana, actually, at a small school, Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, mm-hmm. Louisiana, where they film Steel Magnolias. That's how people know it, if they know it.
Okay.
And then lived in Europe for a year and then came back and went to medical school.
Where were you over in Europe?
I lived in the Netherlands.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was an exchange student over there at
cool.
a school in the north. Absolutely loved it. Highly recommend spending time there for anybody. It's a fantastic
right.
place.
So everybody I know from Texas is pretty much everybody is a football fan. You?
Oh, yes. I grew up loving my Houston Oilers that are no more. So,
okay.
Yes.
What about college?
College for me was my school, which was a small little 1AA school at the time. But certainly I grew up following Texas A&M and UT
mm-hmm.
and both schools. Had friends mm-hmm. at both schools. So
go Aggies.
Depending
man.
On the weekend. Yeah. Yiggum.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And how long have you been in North Carolina?
Wow. Let's see. I think... 7 or 8 years now I've been in North Carolina, but I've been on the East Coast since residency, which started in mm-hmm. 95. So
Virginia,
North mm-hmm. Carolina, and South Carolina I've been in since 1995.
And what prompted you to become interested in pursuing a degree in medicine?
I think when I was younger, I really got into anatomy and physiology. So that was really interesting to me. And then I was introduced to formalized medicine with a summer surgery program with the Baylor College of Medicine one summer and really got some fantastic experience at the Ben Taub Hospital there in Houston. And that combined with my educational academic interests, I think got me involved in medicine and where I am today.
Okay. So the name of your practice or clinics, I'm not sure how you reference them, down in the Charlotte area?
It's Infinite Wellness Centers. So we have multiple practices there. Infinite Wellness is the name of the centers. We have 4 locations in the greater Charlotte area.
Mm-hmm.
So
Okay. Do you have a website down there?
We do. It's infinitewellness.org. So infinitewellness.org. So,
okay.
Yeah,
so people can find out about what you're doing down there.
Oh, absolutely.
Easily.
Absolutely.
And Anastasia, why don't you give out your website before we forget to do that?
Sure. It's abartlettwellness.com.
And that's Bartlett with two T's. Actually, three.
It's two T's and then one T at the end.
Right.
Like the pear.
Oh, okay. I realize I'm looking at the information I put up on the website, and I spelled your name with two T's at the end.
Uh-oh.
I'm in trouble. I'll fix that.
A lot of people want to do that. That's why it's always, one T.
Okay, so it's B-A-R-T-L-E-T.
L-E-T-T. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, B-A-R-T-L-E-T-T.
So oh, I'm off the hook. I did spell
sorry.
It right.
Yep, but one T in the middle, two T's at the end. Sorry.
Okay, well, that's important to get cleared up.
Yes.
Okay, so... when you encounter clients, patients, what are you seeing out there in the community in terms of the concerns that need to be addressed?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I thought I'd just throw a softball
That's
to
a
you.
That's a big one.
I can pick that up because having seen patients over the past 20 years, I think what I've seen, especially having come up in a traditional medical educational and initially practice background, is that people feel disenfranchised from their health. I don't know how else to describe that, but they feel like they have to come and see the doctor, they have to do their blood work, they have to get their prescription, and then come back in 3 months. And what I think that we both have a passion for is helping people reengage in the power of helping themselves, that they do have the ability to do that. I see a lot of folks that, I'll give you an example, come in, classic patient comes in, I'm diabetic. So you're not diabetic. You have diabetes, but you're not diabetic. And I try to really distinguish that for people and say, you actually can control that to some degree. I realize medication, insulin may be necessary for you on some level, but you're not without responsibility in taking care of yourself, and you actually still have power to help yourself be healthier.
So they're identifying with this story around who they are and this condition, and then they want you to fix them.
That's correct.
That's it. I think that's part of it, is really getting people to take responsibility for their own health, because we live in this society where there's always some kind of prescription or there's somebody that you go to for answers. And like, it's just that, right? They become disengaged in their own health and sure. the process.
I call it drive-through medicine. That's our culture in our country right now, right? You want to drive through and say, okay, I want combination number
Instant
two so I can
right.
get that medicine. I have blood pressure. I have diabetes. I need
and
those
overweight,
medications,
right.
and I don't want to change anything about my life. But
right.
those things are going to help me, and that's where I try to break in on that. And Anastasia does the same thing, is to try to create some awareness on that.
Mm-hmm. And let's face it, a lot of conventional medicine fosters that idea.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yes, and that's a tough thing.
All the commercials that we see. Oh, there's so many commercials advertising pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Ask your doctor.
Yes, that's a very frustrating thing for physicians, as you may well know. And we're one of the very few countries in the world that allow direct-to-consumer advertising by pharmaceutical companies. And there are reasons for that we could get into on another show. But the idea
we don't
is
shy away from political controversy here.
Okay,
right?
good. But there's a lot of reasons for that, of course.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And I think what we try to do is just shed light for people on what you do have control over and what you can do and how you can affect your health. You absolutely can. You have to decide to. And then
be willing to do the work. I think that's the other piece of it too, right? Is people want the easy fix or the quick fix. I think that's the other part of it too, is, you know, I told people, you didn't get to where you are overnight. So why would you expect to lose 30 pounds in 30 days or turn around your type 2 diabetes in a month? Mm-hmm. It takes time, and it might take a year or two, depending on where you are in the process. And to be okay with that. I think that's the hardest thing for people to be okay with and to sit with and say, oh, this is going to take time. Because people, they give up or they get overwhelmed, right? And so then it's easy just to walk away from it.
What with the clients that you work with, what do they come to you with? What kind of requests, what kind of issues do you primarily focus on? Or is it really across the board?
It's really across the board. I mean, I would say I think people initially find me because they're looking for either personal training. So they're looking for a way to lose weight. I would have to say, I mean, honestly, the biggest umbrella issue is weight loss. But that tends to then branch out into so many other areas. So I would say weight loss, getting fit, becoming more physically active. So I think a lot of people realize that they become very sedentary and they don't really know how to get started. So I think a lot of times they reach out to somebody like myself because they just need somebody to motivate them, to give them ideas, to get them on the right track, and give them guidance.
Mm. Accountability.
Accountability. Yes. Thank you. That's the word.
And folks need that. Some people come to us in very good condition. I use this all the time with folks, which is they come to me and they say, well, you know, I'm a marathon runner and I have the perfect body mass index and all these parameters, but I just don't feel very good. And we say, well, how are you dealing with your stress on a daily basis? Things like that. Yeah. What do you eat on a daily basis? And they're, well, what do you mean? I mean, I've got all the right numbers. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot more to it than that.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM LP in Asheville, North Carolina. 103.7 on your radio dial and streaming globally at www.wpvmfm.org. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week by Dr. Richard Schaefer and Anastasia Bartlett talking about creating healthier habits for a lifetime of happiness. Let's talk about stress. Okay. What are you seeing out there? How does it impact people physiologically?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You take that one, Doc.
Because that's a big one.
Yeah.
Well, what I present to every single patient that I deal with in regards to stress is that there is nothing that is more important than dealing with your stress. It affects everything. So there's not one medical condition, there's not one issue you can tell me about health-wise that is not affected by stress. And so the issue is first acknowledging that. And I don't challenge people to say, well, get to the point where you have none. That's not reality.
Right.
The reality is, how do you handle it? Because it affects everything. So I'll use a simple example. If you were to break your arm, you fracture your arm, and that's a terrible accident, are you stressed by that? Not just does it hurt you and is it painful, but it also is very stressful to the rest of your life. What if you're a bowler and you just broke your right wrist? There's all kinds of ways that stress affects you physiologically, chemically. It elevates your cortisol levels, which makes weight loss more difficult. It makes blood sugar management more difficult. So if you're highly stressed, even if you're in the most perfect physical condition that you can think of, you're still going to have physiologic issues going on in your body.
Right, and disrupt sleep.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
sleep.
You know, stress also encourages us to eat more sugar or have cravings, right? So, and then if we're not sleeping, then that affects how you can eat or how you can move. So, I mean, it really is to some degree the heart of all our issues.
And
our
it really wipes
issues.
Out the immune system,
it
doesn't
does.
It?
Absolutely.
Yes.
No question about that.
I think for many people, they have trouble identifying that they have stress. Mm. They think it's normal to feel the way that they feel. Part of what I do in my job is I ask people about their stress, and they may say something big like, oh, you know, my mom died, my dad died, my uncle died, or whatever. And then, you know, I ask if there are anything else. Oh, yeah, that accident that, you know, took away my ability to walk and speak for 6 months. You know, and it's almost like an afterthought.
Yes. Yeah, I think part of, you know, again, we live in the society of just go, move on, don't worry about it, don't think about it, you know, don't let things, you know, interrupt your work life, you know, the whole idea of like leave everything at home and just put on a happy face. And so you get into this programming or this pattern of just kind of letting things just bury it, put it down deep inside, and you don't realize all the effects it's having on your health. Mm-hmm. You really do have to tap in or check in. And I think that's where self-care comes in. And
right. And people don't realize how much stress they just have on a daily basis. You know, we were talking about this last night with the crazy ice that was on the road, but I had about 2 hours of stress on the road last night driving, and you can feel how it physically affects your body. Mm-hmm. It raises your blood pressure, all these kinds of things. And you're just so tense. And so the issue is, what are you doing about the stress? We can all agree that we have it, and some people minimize it and say, oh, well, I should just be able to tolerate it. Mm-hmm. And it's not, that's the first is bringing that awareness to the fact of how significant stress really is in someone's life.
Some of them just want to white knuckle their way through it.
Sure.
Yes.
Especially maybe the guys. Do you notice that?
Oh, no, there's no question.
Well, but I think, you know, I think for women, though, there's this idea that we are supposed to be able to work full-time jobs, be mothers, wives, lovers, grocery shop, do the grocery shopping, be the cook, be the, you know, do all of these things and do it with a happy face. Otherwise, you don't enjoy being a mother, your job, or being, you know, your relationships. So there's this idea of like, just put on a happy face. This is your life and just suck it up and deal. You know, so I think you see, I think it's not really a men or women issue. I think we just, men and women handle it in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So maybe there's somebody listening right now who's going, oh, that's me. Mm-hmm. All right. So they're looking for one tip that they can use maybe right now that they could shift how they relate to stress.
Okay. Well, I would think for just one thing I would say, because it was like my brain goes to 1,000 different directions. Breathe. Oh. Learn to breathe.
Say more about that.
I couldn't agree more.
What does that mean? What are you saying?
Exactly. Right. Because what are you talking about? I breathe all the time.
I've heard 9 out of 10 doctors recommend breathing.
It is compatible with living.
Right. If you don't, exactly. You will die. You know, it's the idea of breathing deeper, connecting with your breath, letting your breath ground you. A good example, a good friend of mine who's also a yoga teacher got into a car accident recently. Actually, she's been on your show before. And just rear-ended somebody. It was raining, you know, total accident, whatever. She wasn't texting and driving. But she was able to. She's like, yeah, exactly. She's involved with her disclaimer too. She's like, I wasn't texting and driving. But she said, she's like, in the moment, I just stopped and I just took a deep breath. Yeah. I inhaled through my nose. I let it go slowly out of my mouth. And immediately my heart slowed down. And she's like, and I was able to think clearer. And it was like, okay, need to call 911. Need to do that. You know, go check on the other person in the car. And after all of this, the woman she hit said, I am amazed. You are taking this so well. You're so calm. You're so relaxed. And she said, well, I just breathe. I'm just breathing through this. And the lady's like, what are you talking about? And so they got talking about yoga and the practice of yoga and how it helps to connect with breath. And she actually convinced this woman to come and try a yoga class.
Wow.
For that reason, though, alone, was just to learn how to use your breath to get through it, those tight situations or stress. But I think, again, you have to be able to identify, I'm feeling stressed. So that's the other piece of it, too. I'm feeling stressed. This is what stress feels like in my body. So let me take a nice, deep breath.
Can you lead us in one nice, deep breath?
Sure. Yes. So I would say first, close your eyes. And then just notice your breath to begin with. Just noticing how you breathe on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, which is probably more shallow, more in your chest. So from here, just take a nice, slow inhale through your nose. Let your breath fill into your belly and into your lungs, into the space around your heart. And then as you're ready to exhale, just let the exhale go very slowly and steadily out of your nose. Just feeling your muscles contracting and squeezing out all of the stale air. And then just continue in that way for 4 or 5 breaths. And you should notice a pretty immediate calming sensation. And that's just one way. I mean, there's so many ways to breathe.
And there's stuff happening on a physiological level, isn't there, with the nervous system?
With the nervous system and also the exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide in the lungs, you're opening up the alveoli deep in the lungs, that those small little air pockets that open up and exchange the gases in the blood and make that a much more efficient process for you, that helps with energy level, it helps with better oxygen delivery to tissues, and it helps you use a lot of the dead space that Anastasia just mentioned in your lung. That really is true. We all know the phenomenon of when we breathe, we could actually take just a little bit more breath and a little bit more, a little bit more, and you say, hey, there's a lot of my lungs I'm not using on a regular basis, which is why the practice of breathing and especially yoga and those types of things that have taught me a lot about breathing. Also, I play a brass instrument, so we focus a lot on breathing as well and how important that is. And so I can't emphasize that enough, because the more that you engage the quote-unquote dead space or non-used lung space on a regular basis, meaning daily, the healthier you will be.
And for some people, this is really accessing the body in a way they're not mm-hmm. used to.
Or even connecting.
Connecting.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you see people just completely disconnected from their body? They're not even aware of what's... They're just checked out.
All the time. All the time.
Every
and
day.
Even so, you know, we're talking about yoga, but even with personal training. So I'm working with somebody one-on-one in a physical way. I have to teach them how to breathe. And that, because you think about when we exert or we get into a situation where we're working really hard, the tendency is to hold the breath. So whether we can put it in a workout scenario, but even when we're at work and you notice if you're stressing about something at work, you'll probably notice if you take the time to connect that you're holding your breath or you're at least breathing very shallow. So getting people to learn how to breathe even when they're working out. Mm. So not holding your breath. It actually makes movement so much harder. So learning when to exhale, when to inhale. And I blow people's minds on a regular basis with just that, just learning to breathe
sure.
with your movement and how to recover faster, too. So we talk about recovery, especially if you're talking about training and getting stronger physically, learning to breathe and bring the heart rate down. So elevating your heart and then learning to bring it down, elevating the heart rate, bringing it back down. That's part of training. It's part of becoming stronger, more physically stronger. So teaching people to take those deep inhales through your nose and then a long exhale out of your mouth, several cycles of that just to get your heart rate back down. And then you're ready to go again. You're ready to hit it that much harder. Cause you think about when you're working out really hard, you get to a point sometimes where you're like, I couldn't possibly do another move. I couldn't possibly do another sit up or squat. But if you stop, take those few inhales through the nose, exhale out of the mouth, suddenly your heart rate's down and your body physically is like, okay, let's do this again. I'm ready to go again.
And I really like that the concept that you brought up, which is reconnecting with your body mm-hmm. and your body's power to heal yourself. As we talked about before, I think it's this idea of detaching from what you can actually do to empower yourself to help yourself be healthier, and things like the practice of breathing correctly on a regular basis are part and parcel of being a healthier person.
So you talk about this kind of stuff with your clients and the physicians you have on your staff?
Yes, we talk about this on a regular basis. I challenge my staff on a regular basis to identify why someone has come to our practice. So I'll give you an example. We have a patient that comes in with chronic pain of some sort, back pain, neck pain, knee pain. And I challenge the staff all the time when we're in rounds and we're talking about patients about a plan of action that we have for a plan of care we're going to suggest to them. And I say, well, why are they here? Oh, they came in for knee pain. I said, no, they didn't. They did not come in for knee pain. They came in because their knee pain got them to a point of a decrease in quality of existence on some level that you have yet to discover. Go back and find out why they're here. It's called the quality of life metric. Why are you here? I can't pick up my grandchild anymore. I can't bowl. I can't dance. I can't golf. I can't run. I can't work out. That's the quality of life reason they come in to see you. So it could be weight. So somebody says, I'm so overweight. I really want to lose weight to be healthier, but I also can't dance like I used to be able to dance. That's why they come in. And to me, that's connecting with the patient and saying, okay, you are a being, and you're not just a problem. Just like we talked about diabetes earlier.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
The focus is really more patient directed rather than condition.
Correct.
Focused.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't like to focus on that condition. I understand the need to create some treatment around.
Where did you learn that? I mean, that's not
not in med school.
That's yeah. I was going to say that's not the norm.
Well, I think I came to it on my own to some degree. I had some fantastic mentors. I would say as a resident in Roanoke, I have some fantastic folks that taught me there, and of course colleagues and resident colleagues there as well. But I think also it was my own progress through typical medicine, because I worked in a typical corporate medical practice for several years and got very frustrated and felt like why am I in medicine? This is not what I thought it was going to be. This is not how I was taught to be. And there was a lot more about productivity and RVUs and how many patients you're seeing per day and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I started to detach a little bit from that and say, this doesn't feel like why I got into medicine, especially primary care. For me, is that we're looking at the entire person, and we really try to address that. And I think that's where I gravitated towards, and I got into some yoga and meditative practices about 5 or 6 years into my after residency. And it really called to me. I really thought that I like the idea of awareness and mindfulness, and those types of mm-hmm. things are very important to me. And so I try to challenge my patients with that.
Well, I want to explore that more about the meditation, the mindfulness. Talk about several other topics, including myths and misconceptions, misunderstandings. We're going to explore all that. We're going to take a musical break. And I think one thing that I figured out at one point was the idea that I needed to invest in my own health, because it was sort of like pay me now or pay me later. Mm-hmm. I mean, the body is very resilient, but sooner or later, it's going to shut you down if you don't take care of it. And sometimes that's sooner and not later.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And which kind of brings us to the song that I picked out this week by John Lennon.
This is karma's gonna get you, gonna knock you right on the head.
You better get yourself together.
Pretty soon you're gonna be dead. Why in the world are you thinking of laughing in the face of love? What on earth you trying to do? It's up to you. Yeah, you. This is karma's gonna get you. Gonna look you right in the face.
Better get yourself together, darling.
Join the human race. How in the world are you gonna see laughing at fools like me? Who on earth do you think you are? A superstar? Well, right you are.
Better recognize your brothers,
everyone you meet. Why in the world are we here? Surely not to live in pain and fear. Why on earth are you there when you're everywhere? Come and get your share.
We have John Lennon on WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. You're listening to A Mindful Emergence with Eddie and Margaret. And this program is broadcast every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. on WPVM and is rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. And each week we're joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in their effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. You can also, in addition to listening to us live and the rebroadcast, Past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. You can easily locate them by going to the schedule at WPBMFM.org and just clicking on the program. It's listed Mondays at 7, and you'll see this and other programs listed that you can check out at your convenience. We're broadcasting live Monday, January 1st, 2018. This is program 103. And all our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, our Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. We also offer trainings for CEU credits to healthcare professionals. And you can access more information online at amindfulemergence.com. You can also find us on Facebook and on LinkedIn. And I want to mention, if you're enjoying this show, there's another program in particular on WPVM that has kind of a similar focus. It's Thursdays at 5 p.m. I invite you to join McNair Ezard as he hosts A Better World. This is a show that looks at people and organizations that are working in areas such as hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, the environment and spirituality. So he interviews people out there like the ones that we have on this program who are really making a difference. So let's return back to our guests, Anastasia Bartlett and Dr. Richard Schaefer, talking about creating healthier habits for a lifetime of happiness. So right before the break, you mentioned mindfulness in meditation. So I'd like to explore that a little bit more. Maybe you could talk about not only how you find it helpful working with your patients and clients, but also in your own individual life. You want to start out, Anastasia, or Rich?
I'll start off.
Whoop, sorry. It would help if I put your mic on. There you go.
Oh, that's okay. thank you. I'll start off and just, first of all, how I challenge my patients to begin a simple meditative process. And I call it 15 minutes of nothingness. And what I do is have patients take 15 minutes once a week, and I challenge them to actually do nothing for 15 minutes. And I challenge them to actually do it in a public place. Cannot have a cell phone, has to be off. I said, if you need your cell phone to be on for a 15-minute period, and you can't turn it off for 15 minutes, there's a problem. You can't get rid of your laptop and, you know, all contact. I encourage people to do it in a place like a park where they're just sitting on a bench. And doesn't have to be cross-legged and, you know, closing your eyes and those types of things, because a lot of people, I'm trying to approach them and get them to do this exercise. And I love it when they tell me they don't even have 15 minutes a week to do it. But I have them sit on a bench and just observe the world and observe their thoughts. And that's the first thing that I challenge people to do, 15 minutes once a week. So that's one thing that I do for my patients, to try to get them to begin a process of some simple meditation without even calling it that, because I don't want them to be, or I don't want them to think that there's some name for this. To me, it's an exercise in actually getting in touch with yourself again and your body and paying attention to your thoughts and how things are. So,
and what kind of feedback do they give you?
Well, the first is that I don't have 15 minutes a week to do this, and so I always would joke with them about that. But most people are amazed at how busy their minds are. Mm-hmm. And I said, aha, because the idea is to challenge them to come back to me and say, well, I was thinking about I forgot to let the dog out, and I forgot to do the groceries, and I forgot to send this bill. And I said, well, that's phase one of getting to the fact that you're acknowledging that your mind is very busy, even though you don't even really know that's going on most of the time. It's all subconscious. And what we're doing is bringing that kind of train of thought to the conscious level so you can start to work with and delegate that in a better way. And again, that's a de-stressor. Going back to stress, that's mm-hmm. the beginning of helping sure. someone to work on stress. And that's how I tie that in for them.
So earlier you talked about developing a relationship with their body through mm-hmm. coming to the breath. And now developing a relationship with the mind and yes. starting to pay attention.
Absolutely.
What's going on up there that I wasn't even really noticing?
Mm-hmm. Right. I think I try to just get people to think about the quality of their thoughts, too. So this is something I cue a lot in class, but even just talking one-on-one, is checking in with the quality of your thoughts. So we talk a lot about, you know, trying to quiet the mind or still the mind, which is obviously important, but also just what are the quality of your thoughts? And what people start to realize is how much negativity they have, mm-hmm. and the quality of their thoughts, and how much they critique themselves and they beat themselves up. And there's that constant, called, you know, the monkey mind or the monkey chatter, mm-hmm. always playing in the background. And oftentimes it's negative and it's very self-deprecating.
And people believe their stories about themselves.
They do, absolutely. And that's it. So just getting people to start to notice, mm-hmm. what, you know, where are your thoughts? What are the quality of your thoughts? And then can you shift that? When you notice or begin to notice the quality of your thoughts, can you then flip that and start to, even if you don't believe it, but start to tell yourself something more positive and encouraging? And even if it's just that you love yourself, or that you know, reminding yourself of your talents or the things that you do well. So when you get into those moments of starting to go down that rabbit hole of negativity, can you stop, pause, breathe, and then start to work backwards and start to come out of that rabbit hole by just saying positive things about yourself? And that's hard. That's self-love.
We've got a friend who says, oh, I'm doing that thing that I always do. Oh, look at me. There I go.
I like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So both of you really support people in experiencing wellness in their life. Mm-hmm. And this is a gateway, isn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that the idea is to get people to a place of positivity with who they are and where they're going and what they would like to accomplish for themselves. Anastasia and I talk about this all the time, how easy it is to slide down the slope of negativity.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about that. And the work is actually in turning things in a more positive way, and where your goal may be is going to take steps to get there, but you have to help people be realistic about what they're doing and mm-hmm. positive about mm-hmm. what they're doing mm-hmm. and reinforce that. And part of the mindfulness exercise that we talked about, or even the idea of using mindfulness, is to start to identify when the negativity is coming up.
Right.
And as you said, Margaret, as you said, when someone says, there I am doing that, that's the beauty of actually calling yourself
right.
on it, stopping that, saying,
right.
there it is, I hear you. Now, how can I actually shift that to a more positive direction? Because that's so important.
And that's the hardest part, is just getting people to notice.
I know.
Right? Just get people to notice that.
And
process.
Notice without judgment.
Right.
Correct.
Notice with an attitude of kindness.
Yes.
Right.
It's like, oh, wow, gee, I'm a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's the thing that I do sometimes.
Right.
Right.
And then just laugh at it.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Remember that we're all a little bit crazy.
Just a little bit. Yeah. So another thing I'm sure that you experience is people come to you with a background sometimes in trauma. I wondered if both of you could address this as well.
Well, I can share a story with you about a patient of mine that I will never forget. It was a patient that came in to me who, on the surface, was about losing weight, was very overweight, and I was able to develop a really nice relationship with this particular gentleman. He had been a peace officer in the past. He was retired. And as we got to talking one day, I started talking to him about traumas in his past life. He had been through a divorce before, and so we were touching base on some of those things. And he got a little tearful with me about that divorce. And I just gently probed a little bit more and found out that there was a terrible tragedy he had gone through that had involved his firearm. And it involved a neighbor's child who got a hold of his firearm, which unfortunately he had put on the counter in the kitchen when he came home. And he got home and it was a very quick thing. And he put his firearm on the counter and he was running around changing and the dinner was getting ready. And this child came in and grabbed the gun and actually shot another child. It was just obviously an accidental thing, but he had lived with the guilt of this trauma mm-hmm. of this child shooting another child with his loaded firearm, his mistake, all of that. And he said he had never told anybody that before. Oh. And so what I immediately started working on with him, I said, you realize that this is your main issue. This is it. You must start work on this. And this was 20 years ago. 20 years ago this has happened. He said, I've never told anybody about this. And he said, I don't really know why I told you right now. I said, because you're here to affect positive change in your life. And subsequently, I got him into some counseling and some therapy. We continued to work on his diet, his lifestyle, and a healthier approach, and he lost over 100 pounds. And it was really, really a neat experience for me to say, trauma is a major, major issue mm-hmm. for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Now, your trauma may not have been something as heinous and difficult and serious as that, but we all have them.
Trauma is very pervasive, isn't it, mm-hmm. Anastasia?
Yes, it is. Yep. I think I see that every client I have, you develop these relationships with people, especially working one-on-one with them. And you do. You start to talk and share stories. And it's almost always it comes back to some past trauma, and especially with women. I mean, a lot of times it just comes back to body image issues that they've never dealt with or eating disorders that come from some trauma, something that happened in their life as a child or a young woman, young adult, and they've just never, again, never looked at or faced, and then developed eating disorders or weight gain or these other things that come along with it that are these
or addiction.
Addiction, absolutely, absolutely. Food addiction.
Food addiction.
Or substances.
Any kind,
yes,
we see
yep.
that.
Trying to deal with the pain.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Very true.
I mean, yeah, and I think, you know, therapy, knowing your scope, so that's the other thing too, is seeing that and being able to say to somebody, I appreciate you opening up to me, but I'm not the person to help you.
So you
this.
Refer them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I've got a good referral base. For. Mm-hmm.
And I do as well, honestly. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can initiate that, but I also feel like I need someone who is a professional in that area to really work with someone. That's something that I may be able to bring to the surface, just mm-hmm. like Anastasia, but also be able to say that's a bit much for me to handle in the way that you're going to need to mm-hmm. move through this. It's going to be a project and take some time.
But you can work hand in hand with that therapist and
Absolutely.
Supporting their overall yes. recovery to mm-hmm. wellness.
Yes.
I mean, therapy is just a part of wellness.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I think everybody, I mean, all again, talking about trauma, we all have traumas, whether we've dealt with them or not.
Exactly.
And so therapy is a big piece of that wellness.
Yeah. So what are some of the, when it comes to wellness and health and so on, what are some of the myths and misunderstandings that you bump up against when people come into your offices or when, in your case, Anastasia, you go into their home mm-hmm. to work with them? Let's pick out some of these.
Sure. Well, I'd say one is that people think they can just work out and lose the weight that way. Like, I want to work out because I want to lose weight, but I'm only going to work out with you once a week, and then I'm not really going to change anything else. It's like, that's not going to do it. And people really do think. And so I always tell, one of my favorite sayings is, abs are actually made in your kitchen, not in the gym. Right? So getting people to start to think about, it's not how hard you work out. And I hear that too. You know, I work out all the time and I'm not able to lose this weight. So maybe it's my workout. I need to shift what I'm doing. And it's like, it's, yes, maybe that's part of it. But a bigger part of that is your stress, your sleep, your relationships, how you're eating, and not just what, but how are you eating? Food journaling is a thing I get people to do, just whether we're working in health coaching or whether we're working one-on-one with personal training, just start to look at how you're eating. Mm-hmm. And that's a bigger piece of it. But that's that misconception of, well, I'll just hit the gym. You know, this time of year, everybody let's what, you know, all the gyms start doing their dollar intro fee thing, or, you know, because that's what people think. Well, I'm New Year's resolution. I'm going to lose 50 pounds. So I'm going to do that by hitting the gym every day. And that's great. And so exercise is amazing. It has so many good effects on the body on so many different ways, but it's not the only way you're going
to
lose weight.
I remember talking to a trainer once at this gym, and he said he was pointing to some people on the Stairmasters mm-hmm. and the different machines, and he said they've been coming here 4 or 5 years. They come in, they work out like crazy, and their body hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so that's another big misconception, I think.
Yeah.
Also, the idea of calories in, calories out. So people think, well, if I just restrict my caloric intake, then I'll lose the weight, right? I'll just start eating less.
Talk more about that. What are a couple of examples of healthy eating that you might suggest?
Well,
wow, we can, that's...
I know, it's like, whoa.
That's a huge...
And this is really controversial, a lot of different points of view.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, I think, I'll give you one thing I can think of, and that's the idea of eating everything organic, or the, you know, people say, well, I can't afford to do that. And so what we try to say is, well, the myth, if you want to call it a myth, is that you don't have to eat everything organic. I think you learn what things you must eat organically, or you're going to be exposed to all the toxins.
Dirty dozen.
Correct.
Yes,
and the
yes.
clean 15. That's a simple way to start people to just say, I'm not telling you to go out and buy all 100% organic food. I'm telling you, if you can do that, I want you to support that kind of farming. I want you to support that kind of food supply. But I also realize that we're all living budget-constrained lives. And so we try to say the myth is that you have to start at 100% organic food or something, instead of saying, let's figure out how we can coach you on what you should start with. So the Clean 15 versus the Dirty Dozen. Learn those things from the Environmental Working Group. That's a great thing to do. So that's one thing. I would say from a medical perspective, this is just something I always like to mention if I can, is that explaining to people in regards to their health, especially with weight management, because we deal with that a lot, obviously, it's a popular thing. If you lose 7 to 10% of your body weight, 7 to 10% of your body weight, you have exponentially decreased all causes of morbidity and mortality. Exponentially. We know that statistically it's true. But what happens is patients or clients will come into us and say, I need to lose 50 pounds in 30 days. And number one, that's not realistic. Number two, it's not sustainable.
It's not healthy.
It's not healthy. So what we try to say is set yourself up to get a healthy result and realize that losing just 7% of your body weight, if you're overweight, is extremely important. So to me, the myth is that you have to lose some, you know, oodles of weight to get healthier. You do not. You do not. That doesn't mean that you might not have a weight goal of losing 30 pounds, but over what time period? Mm-hmm. That's really important to help people set up.
And I want to say one more thing, too, about just little tidbits for people. Sugar. We talk about stress being the root cause of so many things. Sugar is, it's one, a drug. It is an addictive
drug. It's evil.
It's, listen, it tastes amazing. We all love it.
I know.
But how much we eat on a day-to-day basis is mind-boggling. And if you could just, that's one thing, if you could just shift one thing just to start somewhere, look at how much sugar, look at the back of your at wrappers, look at what's in your food, really pay attention to how much added sugar, and just how much sugar, but also added sugar is in the food you're eating. And if you could start anywhere, that would be one place to start.
I was talking to a woman last week who had terrible headaches, and Margaret was talking with her as well, and she'd eaten a hot dog. And she hadn't checked the package for nitrates or nitrites. What?
Both.
And those are really toxic and nasty.
Yes.
So if you're going to eat a hot dog, look and see what's on the back of the label and try to get good, high-quality meat.
Start. Well, what you just said, too, start reading the labels on your food.
Right.
Start, again, being mindful and connecting with the food that you're putting in your body. Don't just assume, and don't look at the front of a package. Don't look at the front of a package because that's all marketing. Look at the back and drink more water, for heaven's sakes. Yes, drink more water. That should be really, other than some coffee or tea, which is water based, but drink more water. Get rid of the soft drinks and the soda, juices, even. People are like, oh, I eat, drink juice. That's just sugar. It's just sugar water. It's, I mean, that's great. 100% organic juice. Okay. It's just sugar water. Switch that out for water with maybe a little lemon, right?
So
I'm a big fan of the rule of five when it comes to a label. If it has more than five ingredients, I really have to be convinced that I want to eat it. So it could be a mixed bag of nuts with seven different kinds of nuts. Okay. That's fine.
Or 12 different spices in something. But
But read your label. If it has more than five ingredients, why are you eating it? And then the second thing, the other thing I always challenge people is when you go in the grocery store and you go into the produce section, what do the labels on the produce products say? Like on a banana, what's the label say?
Banana.
It's a banana. There's no label. What are the ingredients of an apple? It's an apple. So I love going into the produce section first and foremost, because that's where you should spend 90% of your time.
Well, Margaret's pointing to me because there's a great story. This guy I was talking to once was saying, you know, it would be great if when you went to the local store, of course, is Ingles here. He said, if you went there and they had a health food section, and I go, they do. It's called the produce department.
Thank you. Yes. Couldn't agree more with that.
Well, and okay, one more quick tip, too. Yeah. Think about grocery stores. Stay on the outer edge of a grocery store.
Exactly.
That's another simple rule of thumb. Don't go down the middle aisles. That's where all your process. I mean, obviously, if you need to grab some, you know, tomato sauce or tuna fish or, you know, but generally speaking, you want to stay out of those middle aisles. That's where all your processed foods, all your, you know, carb, heavy carb foods are. So just stay produce, meat, dairy, you know, that's all going to be on your outer edge of the grocery store.
I actually challenge my patients to leave their cart at the end of the aisle, not their wallet and their purse, but leave their cart at the end of the aisle and walk down the aisle to get the item you want, then go back to your cart.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yes. Do not, because all those products are placed by advertisement and by money.
Very strategic. So, what about supplements, supplementation?
I have a lot of passion about that, and you could probably do a whole topic on that. I think, generally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of just broad-based supplementation. I know lots of people that will come and say, I'm taking 57 supplements. I'm saying, there's no way you physiologically really need that. So what I try to tell people is focus on the issues that you have physiologically going on in your body. So, for instance, if you have diabetes, there are specific supplements that I would recommend based on how well your diabetes is controlled. If you have hypertension, high blood pressure, maybe there's a few supplements I'd recommend. I'm not personally a huge fan of multivitamins. They've done a lot of good studies on multivitamins. Number one, they're not always bioavailable because they're so compacted into that pellet. There are some powdered multivitamins that may be better, but the decrease in morbidity and mortality due to multivitamins has yet to be proven. So what I say is you need to focus on your physiologic issues, your medical problems, and speak specifically with your healthcare provider about
that. Do you think
that.
Getting a blood test is a good idea? Or a hair, was it hair?
Hair analysis, and looking at heavy metals and things. You can certainly do those types of things. I'm actually a bigger fan of looking at food allergies and what causes overall body inflammation. So we're seeing a lot more about that. Now in medicine, we're seeing total body inflammation. I'm not talking about swelling in your joints from a sprained ankle or a knee. I'm talking about total body inflammation that leads to blood vessel inflammation that can lead to plaque formation and heart disease.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at decreasing overall total body inflammation. And to me, that's looking at things like probiotics.
That's looking at
prebiotics as well. That's looking at food sensitivities and allergies. And I'm not talking about something that necessarily gives you hives. I'm talking about something that gives you inflammatory reaction in your bloodstream, and that can be measured.
And getting foods high in antioxidants.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like blueberries.
Blueberries are fantastic.
And those are something, even though they're really expensive, probably a good idea to get organic.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, because they get
soft
sprayed.
Sprayed a lot, yes.
Yeah. So obviously a lot of people make New Year's resolutions. What are some good approaches that you might suggest?
Well, one, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit last night, and I was actually talking about this in my class today. Look back at the year that's passed, right? Look back, start from there, just looking back, reflecting a little bit, taking some time to see what your biggest struggles were. Also looking at and celebrating your victories, no matter how small, how big they were. And then coming from that place. So knowing, being able to identify your struggles, right? So that when you go to start setting goals or New Year's resolutions, you know you can be realistic. Be more realistic with your goals.
Don't set yourself up for failure.
Right.
Don't set yourself up to do something that you know is really hard to do. So, for instance, we talk about weight loss. It's just the easiest thing to mention. If somebody comes into me and says, I need to lose 30 pounds. And I said, okay, over what time period? And I would say, what if you lost an average of 1 pound a week for a year? Let's say there's 52 weeks in a year. So you lost, say, 52 pounds in a year. Would that be okay with you?
That's realistic, isn't it?
Correct.
It is.
It is. And it's healthy to do it that way as opposed to, I need to lose 52 pounds before spring because I got to get into my bathing suit or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
So it's creating realistic goals so that you don't end up succeeding in failure, because then it's easier to just roll down that negative hill again. Well, I guess I just can't do it, so why bother?
Right. Oh, I say to maybe even chunking down your goals. So looking at it from a quarterly period, right? So
yeah,
maybe
like
setting goals
too.
For 3 months and then reassessing. That's the other thing too. Don't just set these lofty big goals and then just that's it, and that's the last time you ever look at them. So maybe look at setting a goal for January, February, March, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in March, going back and looking at where you are, what have been some of your biggest struggles, and maybe then assessing too. It's time to hire a personal trainer or a health coach, or going to see my physician, or you know, getting some outside help. Maybe joining the gym, whatever it is, but take it in steps.
So bite size,
yes. And then also that way, so you really again come back and take time to look at where you've come and then where you still need to go, and then set some new goals for the next 3 months, and so that you're really having this ongoing conversation with yourself. And then you can also know where you need a little extra help too. So
yeah, Give out your website again.
Sure. It's www.abartlettwellness.com.
Do you have anything coming up you want to mention?
I have a postpartum workshop that February 4th, which is a Sunday. So it'll be all around postpartum health and not just about, oh, I want to get back into my jeans. Just really about how do I manage my stress and my sleep. And, and definitely there'll be some physical practice to
that. There's information on their website.
Not on my website at the moment. We just kind of came up with this, but Asheville, it's at Asheville Community Yoga.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be on their website.
AshevilleCommunityYoga.org.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that'll be a great workshop.
Yes.
And you're doing the prenatal when? What?
So I'm teaching Monday through Friday prenatal yoga. There's different times each day, and we have
just go to the schedule.
Yep, and then we have class on Saturday and Sunday. Margaret teaches a Sunday class. The idea with bringing on prenatal every day at Asheville Community was to reach as many people as possible. So every day is a different time, so that we can reach everybody.
And your website again?
It's infinitewellness.org.
Down in Charlotte.
Down in Charlotte area.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, thank you both for coming in, Anastasia Bartlett, Dr. Richard Schaefer, and sharing your expertise and your passion for wellness
this
week.
It's a passion, definitely.
Yes, thank you for having us.
And thanks to you listeners for tuning in this week and listening to another edition of Mindful Emergence. Have a great week.